It's the Record on KUOW. This morning, the Supreme Court handed down a decision that the notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she called it egregiously wrong. Slate said it legalizes wage theft. What happened? What does it mean? Here to explain, Professor Eric Schnapper, University of Washington School of Law. He's handled more than 80 Supreme Court cases. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Will you remind us why class action status is so important to workers and troublesome to business? That's the backdrop here, right?
Well, it's not just workers. It's consumers and people affected by in a number of practices. There are many claims that are so small that as a practical matter, it would make no economic sense to bring them individually. And they're small enough that you couldn't get a lawyer as well. In those kinds of circumstances, unless class actions can proceed, the laws just don't get enforced.
Right.
And that's the problem here.
So what did the Supreme Court ruling say today?
Well, this is the most recent of a series of Supreme Court decisions permitting the use of binding arbitration to limit legal remedies. And one of the common features of binding arbitration is that the arbitration agreement, which is written by the defendant, in this case the employer,
and the employee signs the agreement?
That's not necessarily.
Oh.
The agreement, the words are written by the employer, and they commonly ban class actions. You'll see the same thing, and Bill, have undoubtedly signed onto that many times with your credit cards and your bank statements, and when you rent cars.
Okay.
They commonly ban class actions. In the case of employees, they may well never sign anything. There may just be a rule book somewhere that says if you work here, you're agreeing to go to arbitration. Sometimes people sign things, but often not.
And so up to now, the employees were able to say, well, I might have agreed, or you might have written this language that I have to go to arbitration, but you can't make me. I can join a class action.
That was the question. Employees are protected by the National Labor Relations Act, which provides that employees have a right to engage in what the statute calls concerted action. They can do things together. So a strike would be a classic example of concerted action. So the question that arose here was, would bringing a lawsuit with a couple of other workers be concerted action under the statute and protected by the National Labor Relations Act so that you couldn't give up that right by signing an agreement? That was the question. So it wasn't clear what the answer was here. The argument that was made that was bought by Justice Ginsburg, but not by the majority, was that these kinds of bargaining agreements can't be enforced if they bar class actions. But yeah, it was only for employees. It wouldn't have covered consumers.
So when, for example, Slate says this legalizes wage theft, we can argue that in a moment, but what do they mean?
Well, I think probably in fairness to business, you really have to distinguish between two kinds of employers. The problem about violating the minimum wage laws and the overtime laws is that employers make money by breaking the law, which isn't true of all laws. If you engage in sexual harassment, you don't make money off it. So there are employers who quite consciously break those laws because every dollar you pick from your workers' pockets is a dollar in profits. There are also employers who have to make decisions about how close to the line they're going to go. There are areas where it's just not clear whether what you're doing would violate the minimum wage laws or not. One of the purposes of liability is to deter people from doing things that might well be illegal because they're going to be liable if they do. You are not going to work very hard to make sure you're not breaking the law under this decision because the law has become unenforceable.
Five out of the nine justices, they made this case, the sort of pro-business case. What is that business case for this ruling?
Well, this was a very technical decision about the interrelationship between the Federal Arbitration Act and the National Labor Relations Act. It rested on the wording of the statutes, the argument made by the majority wasn't that business is good and workers are bad. It fell along the normal liberal conservative lines, but it was at bottom, from the majority, a technical decision about the wording of the statutes.
So statutes can change. Is there something that might happen in individual states, for example, Washington State? Well, how will people react to this?
The Washington legislature could do things to address this. First of all, it could authorize the state attorney general to bring lawsuits on behalf of workers or consumers whose rights are violated, those lawsuits would not be affected by this decision or the Federal Arbitration Act. There are states where attorneys general can do that sort of thing. I think it would be a good idea here. Secondly, it could make it illegal to fire a worker who wouldn't sign one of these agreements. It's not at all clear that an employer couldn't do that today, and I think that would be a sensible sort of protection. California also has a law preventing private lawyers to sue sort of like an attorney general. That's a less clear area of the law.
Do you think a much talked about hypothetical Democratic takeover of Congress in the midterms would change, would Democrats go after this legally?
There's been support on the Hill for changing this whole area of the law about binding arbitration. It's gained a lot of visibility because binding arbitration was used in the Stormy Daniels case to try to keep her from discussing her claims publicly. And there's been support on the Democratic side of the aisle for dealing with this. I think it's probably not realistic to think anything's going to happen as long as the current occupants in the White House.
Would this ruling affect the case of that porn actress Stormy Daniels?
No.
Okay.
She wasn't an employee of the president. And that was more of, it's an unusual turn of phrase here, arm's length relationship in that they probably did negotiate over the terms of that agreement. And it's conceivable that she could have said, I won't agree to arbitration. And they could have said, well, then we'll only give you $90,000. And it was more of an arm's length negotiation at that point, even though the relationship apparently was not.
Yes.
But employees, and then that's different. Employees don't have that choice.
So overall, Professor, what is the state of play when it comes to the balance of power between business and labor so far into the Gorsuch-Trump administration?
I'm not sure either Gorsuch or the president would want to be bound together in a sentence quite like that.
Uh-huh.
But given at this point in time, I mean, clearly this has shifted the balance of power away from workers and towards employers. Not every employer does this, and I think those who don't deserve commendation for that. I think it's important not to paint all employers with the same brush.
Yeah, when we're considering that constant back and forth between business and labor and how the court strikes the balance, I wonder where you think we are in the scale and where we might be headed, future rulings, future laws.
It is not difficult to overstate the importance of ideology in the Supreme Court. Most cases aren't decided by 5-4 votes. When the court divides, it doesn't always divide on liberal-conservative lines. I've handled a lot of employment cases in the court. The vast majority of them have been decided 9-0. I've only had a couple that were decided 5-4. So this isn't a good day for workers, but I think it would be inappropriate to read this as a sign that a majority of the court is intent upon, you know, stamping out all worker rights and giving all power to the employers.
Is there a local employer who you think is an example of a business that and whose employees would be affected by this ruling? Is there a local case?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the employment rules are at different firms. I think this is the sort of thing that's it's not fair to employees, and we'd be better off if this practice stopped. But I don't know what the local situation is.
We've been talking with Professor Eric Schnapper, University of Washington School of Law. He's handled more than 80 Supreme Court cases. What's the next big Supreme Court case you're looking out for?
Not in this area. I think we're all looking to see what happens about the president's Muslim ban. I think that's one of the big unresolved issues this year.
Any predictions?
No.
Hard to tell. Okay. Well, that's why we watch it. Professor Schnapper, thanks a lot for this.
My pleasure.
That's our show. The Record is produced by Amina Alsadi, Allison Bruzek, Ajua Jim Abrempong, Jason Pagano. Our social media producer is Bree Ripley. I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.